All right, today we've got Shane, who was described by the Home Office as in the top six most dangerous prisoners in the country. And we've got Wildman co-interviewing in the Liverpool studio. Wildman's playlist is in the description box below this video. Over 100 videos now, hours and hours of content if you want to check out the Wildman stuff. So Shane, thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having us.
How did they come to this conclusion that you were one of the six most dangerous prisoners in the UK?
It's because I was just attacking officers and hated the system. But it started off basically me going to jail for... I was first originally charged for two attempted murders.
Two attempted murders. Are you able to describe the story behind them, or can you not talk about that?
Yeah, well, I can. Well, the first attempted murder was there was a lad from Hartlepool. He was meant to be a nutcase himself and he'd just getting out of prison. And we confronted each other over something in the middle of the town centre in Hartlepool. And that's when he pulled out a hammer. We call them mash hammers, the square ones, what you do pavement slabs with. And you can get the big long-handled ones or the short-handled ones. Yeah. You get a short one of them. And he ran up to me and he smashed me across the top of my head. But as he was doing that, I used to walk about with the kitchen knives. I used to have the full set all around my waist, and I would walk the streets, and I basically pulled out the biggest one, which was the 9-inch kitchen blade, and I stabbed him straight through the top of his head here, and it come out of his eyebrow there, and then obviously everybody scattered, everyone shouted police, everybody ran, he was left with a knife. See, when I ran away, because what used to happen to me, I was a bit mentally ill at the time, mm-hmm. So when I felt threatened, I'd go blank. And so I didn't really know what was going on. All I knew was he hit me across the head with a hammer. And everything else I'm telling you is what was in the depths and what like witnesses had said. But I ran away and I got a mile away from the scene and I come back round and I was not come back normal. And I thought I had the knife still in my hand because I had the handle in my hand. And when I had the handle in my hand, everyone was like, just look white, like pale white, like they would just look scared like they'd seen a ghost. And I was like, what's up with yous? They went, you've killed him. I said, you just stabbed me in the head. I said, no, I've got the knife in my hand. And I looked and I go, and he had the handle. And I'd left the handle in, I've let the blade in his head and the handle had snapped off and we'd ran. So that was the first attempted murder.
So if he drew first blood, you reacted in self-defense. Is it because of the nature of your reaction with the knife, it becomes that serious a charge? You can't say it's just self-defence.
You look, it's premeditated, don't you? If you're actually carrying a blade with you.
Kind of kitchen set.
Yeah, if you'd picked the brick up
there
and then and did it, it's not premeditated.
Right.
But if you've got, like, you know, more knives than fucking...
Rambo,
yeah.
Were you in some kind of gangland warfare that this was
going
on?
No, I've never been in... I used to think I was a gangster when I was younger and when I was running about like an idiot. But when I look back on my life, I was just an idiot.
How old were you when this happened?
I was young. You're talking, I don't know, about 19, 18, 19 when that happened.
It's good that you describe yourself as an idiot because the kids watching this, we don't want it to be glamorised.
100%.
What do you say to kids who are carrying knives like that?
Just, it's wrong. And you think you're big and tough at the time, but it's a big mistake. At the end of the day, you can kill them. And not 9 times out of 10 when people carry knives, it's not too... to stab people, you know what I mean? Some people aren't capable, but they carry them and then you end up getting into situations where they end up stabbing someone and then you end up killing them. And then it's like you've ruined their life and you've ruined your own life and your family's lives and their family's lives. And the ripple effect of who that hurts is just, it's a big mistake for me. And for me, changing my heart. See, this is the difference. Here we go. This is the difference for me. Is when you're in a life of crime and you're going around stabbing and hurting people, it's good and you don't care. But what about one day if you suddenly change your heart and you realise what you've done and you have them images in your head of what you did to people and
you've got to live with that.
You've got to live with that for the rest of your life. And at the time, you might feel okay about it and at the time it might be good, but you're going to grow up and one day you are going to regret what you've done. And so rather than have them regrets, it would be good not to have them. Do you know what I mean? It's as much as I can say about it, really.
Thank God, though. God will forgive.
Yeah, 100%.
That's a really powerful message, Shane. I really appreciate that. Because we do have so many young people watching the videos and We don't want them to be picking up knives and ending up spending the rest of their lives in prison. And the mum, seeing the mum in court and all that stuff, it's absolutely heartbreaking, isn't it? And the mum of the victim as well.
Yeah.
And her family.
But he come at you with a hammer. I mean, people nowadays, they're getting stabbed for the phone and stuff. It's terrible. But, I mean, for him to come at you with a hammer, there must have been some...
Well, there was things in the background of why that happened. This wasn't just a thing of, like, you know...
It wasn't just you met on the street.
No, there wasn't someone...
What was the background? Are you able to talk about that?
Not really, but it's just about basically two people. So you have two people who are handy and two people... They want to meet up on a field and fight.
Like Viv Gray and Lee Duffy.
Yeah, but and then you have people who are classed as a bit psychopathic and a bit nuts. And then it's like, who's more crazier? Who's willing to go as far?
Like Brian Cockrell.
So you turn up with a knife. You turn up with knives and you fight. And who's going to run and who's going to stand and take the knives? Who's going to stab the living daylights out you and kill you because they've got the guts? No, and I'm not saying this to brag, but I was the kind of, because of my mental health, I couldn't let things go. And so and the more I left it, the more aggressive and angry, and the more I would think about killing them. And I was diagnosed with having psychopathic tendencies by a psychiatrist and paranoid delusions in the sense of, if someone disrespected me, it wouldn't go out my head. And I would sit on a daily basis and plan and think, I'll kill him, I'll stab his neck, and I'd daydream it. And then I'd walk down the street and then I'd feel like people were laughing at me. I'd think like, look at that, he's mugged you off and they're all laughing, they all know about it. And then I'd go home and I'd be like, yeah, he's mugging me off, is he? He's mugged me off. Right, I'm going to kill him. And then I'd start daydreaming about how I was going to kill him. And I've had an incident where somebody bumped into me. This is crazy, this, but someone bumped into me and it wouldn't leave my mind. So about 6 months or something, it was in my head and I was thinking about killing him and that. And I turned up at his door 6 months after. I was like, oh, then get out, to go on a bit mad. He was like, what on earth are you on about? He totally forgot. Even on the same day, he forgot all this happened. But I'm still there 6 months down the line wanting to kill him and thinking about it. And it wouldn't go out my head. And that was the kind of person I was. I wasn't hard, but I was game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't back down from anybody and I'd have a fight. And I would fight people. I wasn't like, I wouldn't not do that. But there was something not wired in my head, and I just, even if I had a fight and I got beat, I wouldn't be able to leave it. I'd have to come back. I'd have to kill him. I'd have to stab him. I just couldn't leave it in my brain.
You take it to the next level.
100%, yeah, which I've proven, and that's what I've sort of done in my life.
Well, you look like a big, handy fella now, but you said you were even bigger back then.
I was about 19 stone, full
were
of
rights. Weights and stuff?
Yeah, weights constantly. It's why I stabbed the prison, when I went in prison and went a bit wild. It's why I've like done crazy things because they wouldn't let me go to the gym and stuff like that. So I've kicked off and ended up with bigger charges in prison and stuff.
Did you get on the steroids or drugs?
I've been on steroids, yeah. Drugs was just more like I couldn't, if I took any weed or out at all, at the time it was tack weed, solid, and I would just go paranoid instantly. If I took Wiz, I'd be paranoid to death. If I tried to take drugs, I would just go super paranoid. And at the time, I used to think, because I was paranoid, I used to always worried about being shown up in a fight. And so I would just constantly train. I wouldn't take drugs. And I would just train constantly because I always felt like people were out to get me. And I had to be ready at all times so that I could win. Like, I can't explain how my mind used to think.
When I was in prison over there, I generally took Temis.
Yeah.
Oh, you get twos and fours. They make you sleep good. But you see some of them, especially the Scottish, they're just smacked out. They must do more smack in fucking prison than they do outside.
Yeah, there's loads of drugs in jail, isn't there?
Fucking crazy.
It's more in jail than on the out sometimes, isn't it?
And then you've got Sunderland and Middlesbrough, like you say, Hartlepool. Don't they call them monkeys or something?
What, monkey hangers, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they get called. The storyline behind that, because the mentor have found a monkey on a boat and thought it was a spy. So they hanged it, and so they get called monkey hangers to this day. Yeah. But they get insulted at that, so I'm not meaning to insult people. He said it.
Yeah, just to put this on the same playing field then, I've got so many stories about Wildman's paranoia. He'd stay up on crystal meth for a week at a time, And then he'd think like the Mexicans were coming to kill him and stuff. But there was one night in particular, me and a bouncer. This bouncer had been telling him stories of Wildman before Wildman arrived in America. And he thought I was embellishing. He goes, I finally met Wildman and we went out and Wildman just picked me up like I was a rag doll and threw me around and all this stuff. So me and this bouncer in the front of the car. Wildman's in the back. And we're driving away. I'm like on ecstasy and stuff, buzzing. And Wildman's just looking at me, just staring at me with his bloodshot eyes. He hasn't slept in a week. I'm like, what's up, lad? He's just staring at me. And he goes, I know you two are taking me out to the desert. We're like, what? Where are your best mates? We love you. What are you talking about? I know too much. You're taking me out to the desert, aren't you?
You build yourself up, don't
yeah,
you?
And you might, yeah.
And I'm thinking, if he believes this, he's probably got a weapon on him any minute right now. I'm driving. There's going to be a fucking knife going in my neck or something.
Nah, it's
going
to choke us. There's going to be like a lot of that. You get the next together, bang them together to choke them out.
Class.
So you said there was a second attempted murder. What was the backstory for that?
Well, that one was this. What happened is someone passed a lie around that I'd done something to chased an older woman or something.
Mm.
And they passed that around to get a lad who was meant to be a bit handy at the time to get him involved, and it wasn't true. And I was selling ecstasy at the time, but mine probably wasn't as good as yours, but no. I used to sell them at the time. It was only a few, and I had a bag of 100 E. And I went in to get rid of them because someone had passed a rumour around that they had heroin in because they had brown speckly dots on them. And someone said they'd been mixed with heroin. And at the time, it wasn't a big thing where I come from, so no one would have them. So I walked into a club and didn't realise that they'd passed this rumour around. And there was a local lad who was pretty handy at the time. I give the eight me mate, when he have a free night, there's 100 E for you. I chucked them to him and he's there with his pals and his long leather jacket, you know. And he went, yeah, I want a word with you. I remember going to the side and I sat down with him and he said what he'd said. And I went to explain myself. I thought, wait there a minute, I don't have to explain myself to him. And I sat back and he's going on and on and on. And then I just remember looking to the side and thinking, he's just pulled me up here. The whole club was silent. Everyone knew I was getting a bit mad now and everyone was getting a bit fearful of me. And I just had this sense, if I don't do anything to him here, he's just pulled me up. If I walk away, it looks like he's pulled me up and I've backed down.
I'm going to lose face.
And that's what I thought. So I made a choice there and then. I want to make an example of him. So all these people in here know what's going to happen when you pull me up. And then as I'm thinking this in my head, he said the wrong thing. He come forward a bit on the table and he just said, you want to mess about with the big boys, do you? Mm-hmm. And something snapped in my head and I went into his face. Remember, I'm not a gangster, but I thought I was. I put my head into his face and I said, no. You just messed about with, you know, come outside. I said, I'm going to kill you. So I walked outside the club and it was on some steps. It's called the Royal Arms area in Peatley. And he didn't come out. So I thought, oh, he's flapped it. He's back down. And I went to the top of the stairs and there was loads of people in front of him. They were saying, do not go out there. He means what he says. And they were trying. He's like, no, when you've had a drink, move out the way and yeah, stuff like that. And anyway, I heard one of them shout, leave him. He's been warned. Leave him. Let him go. And they all stepped out the way. He come out. I went to the top of the stairs with a knife. Like, you know, my famous pack. And I just basically pulled out the 9-inch kitchen blade and I waited for the door to open. And as he come out, I turned around and just stuck the knife straight through his body.
Oh, my God.
And I pulled it out.
In the chest, in the heart.
Around about there. I pulled it out, and when I pulled it out, it made like a sound like that. No sound going in, so I'm guessing it must be like the wind, the air sucking in.
Yeah.
So when I pulled it out, what was weird about what I can see is when I did it and pulled it out, I actually thought I'd missed because there was no blood. Then all of a sudden, he just dropped, and then it was just like... Like, just so fast, as if there was a tap.
It was that deep cut. I've seen them before. I've seen a guy get slashed. And you actually open up for a bit, and there's no blood at all.
It was weird. Is that weird?
And next minute, it's so deep.
And that's what happened. And it was just like a tap was on, and it went from having nothing to literally it was just like a tap. Then two lads jumped off this step and they both pulled out knives and it was like a standoff. So I'm in the middle and when I'm going for him, he's trying to get me. And then when I'm going for him, so what I did is I thought to myself, see how calm I am in this situation, everyone would be panicking. And I just thought to myself, wait there a minute. He's coming at me, but he was forward. So he's like jabbing at me.
Yeah.
And he's forward. And I thought to myself, I can get him in the temple. I thought, if I pretend to go for him, then I can just swing and get him. And so I went to pretend to get him. And as he come in, I just turned and just swung. And he just got his head back. And I just missed him. And he went, whoa. He said, he means business him, are we? And they both walked off.
Did you think about throwing the knives at him?
I didn't know. I didn't. Well, if I'd have been in trouble if I threw it, and then they both stood with one. But so I'd have been a bit
like with his pack.
Yeah.
So I'd have been in trouble a little bit. But yeah, just sort of. And now I'm on the run. See, because the first one, what happened is there was not much evidence on it, so they had to bail me for further investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So they bailed me on a further investigation, which shocked me. But sometimes I think the police just want you to get lifed off and they know you're going to. So like, yeah, get him out again. Go on, he's going to do something. And that might be my paranoia.
What was your bail on the first one?
The bail was attempted murder.
I mean, how much do you have to pay to get out of the bail?
Oh, you don't.
You don't.
Not in this country.
They just let you out on attempted murder?
Yeah. No, it's due to lack of evidence. Of what's, there was no evidence at the time. There wasn't much evidence.
They've got to build up for the Crown Court.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're hoping you'll do something else to make
well, that's what I'm guessing. But what happened was is, so then I'm bailed on that one. And while I'm on bail for that one, this happened. And now they're like blocking estates off and raiding people's houses who I don't even know. And then the people who I do know, they went to a different area, come in with the, not guns, like dogs and the riot gear and all that, went straight to the pictures of me, smashed the pictures out and took the photos. Like, it's illegal, really, I think, that you take that's someone else's house. You can't go and take the property without any... But they were just going to people's houses, smashing their... getting the pictures out and taking the pictures with them.
They're making themselves a nuisance because they were thinking... Oh, these are going to get fed up of us looking for him. One of them's going to dob him in. You know what I mean?
We're torturing, like, just all over people, do you know what I mean, to get me. And they even had, like, photographs, what they were giving to all shops around our local areas. And the reason why I knew this is I walked in the shop one day, and you know when you just see that the shop woman just, like, as if she knew who I was, she was just like, and, like, just acted, and I just thought, nah, and I ran. And I went out and I ran. And they were telling people, like, no, if you see this person, you know, ring instantly and stuff. And within, like, 5-10 minutes, the whole area was just absolutely covered. So I couldn't go out anywhere. I couldn't do out.
You see the notice board with, like, people selling fridges and that, and a big wanted picture with you. You go, what's going on here?
It's crazy.
How long were you on the run for?
About 3 or 4 months.
What was your strategy?
Get revenge on everybody I can before I get caught.
So you wasn't just trying to hide, you were trying to get... revenge as well.
Yeah, so there was one occasion where I pulled up. I haven't mentioned this, I don't think. Where I pulled up outside of a house. And I was actually going for the motorbike. There was a nice motorbike there, and I thought, oh, I'll get that one. And as I was pinching the motorbike, someone hung out the top window and went, oh, you, what you doing? So I went, pinching your bike, what does it look like? And as I looked up, I realised it was someone who hit me mum when I was in prison years ago and I was younger. And basically, I just sort of like, as soon as I saw him, I wanted him to see me. I'm on the run anyway. I thought so I could get lifed off. I took my helmet off. I went, you know who I am? And he was like, who are you? And then he realised who I was when I told him. And I started booting into his front door, kicked his front door in. Him and his family barricaded themselves in the back room so I couldn't get into the back room. And if the truth is... And I'm not going to hide who I was, you know, I'm ashamed of who I am. I had no, you know, you get criminals, I don't know if you can say this, but criminals who think they're morally right, and they're moral, because I don't do this thing and I don't do that.
They justify things aren't justifiable.
Criminals are criminals.
They just make it, they're trying to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
That's all.
And that's what it was, you know, but I had no morals. Like, I would have killed anyone in that room if I got in it. Like, I just didn't care. And, you know, scumbag or not, who cares? And if I can't get you, I'll come after your mother. If I can't get your mother, I'll come after your wife. If I can't get your wife, I'll get you back. You know, and this is how I used to think. And it's morally wrong. And when I look back, and the thing is I've got kids now. And so the biggest thing for me, you know, I was talking earlier on about you've done things in your life and you've got to live with it. And I've got like 5 kids now under 10. And the thought of them having to experience being like dragged into a room and have to be barricaded in because some crazy man is trying to come in and get them. It's like an experience I would never want my children to experience. And so this is the things I live with. This is the things I have on a daily basis. I remember washing up one day and there's something I've done in my life. So I've done that much and I forgot all about it. And I was just washing up one day and it just hit me. I got the image of this stuff. And because I used to do that all the time, running people's houses and the families would be there. And I've got images of like kids screaming and the parents have got a hold of them. And I've got these images and me putting knives to the throat saying, I'm going to kill yours with a psychopathic look. Like, I've got to live with, I've got to live with that.
Well, people can see you're a changed man. And yeah. You're extremely honest. You know, a lot of people sugarcoat what they've done, and you've come in here and you've just like laid it all out, nothing to hide, and you know, just nothing but respect for that.
And you're not glamorizing it either. You see quite clearly you're upset over it, you know what I mean? Respect that though, man.
And you've told the young people this is what happens when you get into that knife game, and don't do it basically as well. So,
otherwise, a real man will come and get you with a fucking lot of Gordon Ramsay fucking style.
Imagine these two showing up at your house because you think you're smart because you're a drug dealer or something just starting out, and these two come and tax you. All right, so you're in the house. They've barricaded themselves in. Do you try and get through the barricade or you just get out there?
I try to get in, and then obviously you know you've got a time limit for the bobbies there.
Yeah.
I'm on the run anyway. As soon as my name's mentioned, they'll be everywhere.
Did you get at least the key for the motorbike?
Yeah, I didn't get the bike. I just jumped on the one I hadn't done one.
Yeah.
And then I just went on an absolute... Do you know when you give up on life and you think, you know what, I'm going to jail for a long time, sack it. If I get life, I get life. And I just started... sort of like, and I was horrible to my pals as well. I was taxing me, like going to my mates' houses and just saying, oh, how much is there on the side? And it'd be like a couple of grand. And I'd be like, right, thank you. Oh, we man, we met them. Shut up, bang. And I'd just start taxing everybody and just went absolutely wild. And there's a lot more, there's other stuff I've done, there's other stabbings and there's other things, but I've never been caught for them, so I can't really
Let's
say.
Let's not discuss them.
Yeah. So yeah. What I mention is what the police already know about, so that's all I can say.
So were there any big-time names? Like, a lot of people come on here, talked about Viv Graham, Lee Duffy, people like that. For your era, were there any big time names you were associated with?
Associated with is this is what I'm saying. I thought I was a gangster. I thought I was with loads of criminals, but not big, no big time gangsters, no big time faces. I've bumped into some very big faces, and I've been around and done things with big faces. But I'm not a gangster. I'm not a gang member. I'm just some absolute nutcase who wouldn't back down from anybody, and was just an absolute psychopath who the gangsters would probably avoid. And if anything, if not avoid, thought, oh, great having him on my side because no one will, you know. So that's all I was. I was nothing special. But at the time, I thought I was. I'd watched too many Tupac films and too many Goodfella films, and I'd run about thinking that running about, being crazy and being a nutcase and having people walk across the street when you, I thought that was a gangster. And it's not.
It's called gangsteritis.
Yeah, well, that's what I was, and I admit it. But at the time, I would have, if you'd have said it, I'd have been like, I'm the biggest gangster in this jail. Who wants, oh, then let's go. Anyone wants to fight, let's fight. And I'll beat them, and that's what I was like.
But you were healthy as well, though, weren't you? You wasn't getting all drugged up and doing needles and out.
No, I was very fit. I've got, well, you can't see it now, but there's pictures where I was 19 stone, absolutely ripped to death, psychopathic. I bummed into... I wouldn't say he's a big name, as in he's like an international name, but there's someone in Middlesbrough who is a pretty tough lad, and he is well known. And he's a fighter, super heavyweight world champion as well. He's called Paul Venice.
Big lad then.
If you look on his fights, he's called Paul Venice, and he's a very, very hard man. and a very tough lad and well known. And he says a few things about me being a bit of a nutter. And in one of them, he just says basically that he knows he could beat me. He knows he would have beat me back then in a fight, but at the same time, he knows how much of a nutcase he is. And probably he's asked to watch every bush he walks past when he, you know. So sometimes I think there's different kinds of a reputation, you see. Well, I'd say there's three. I'd say there's the big boys, and they're in it for the money, and it's all about becoming powerful and like mafia kind of figures and ecstasy kingpins or whatever, you know. But and then you've got, on that under that level, you've got two kinds of reputations. So you've got people who can fight, and they can fight, and they're hard, and not many people can beat them. And then you get the psychopathic people who people just think, avoid him, don't cross him, because he'll turn up at your front door and blow your head off.
Well, the guys who fight are the ones avoiding psychopathic too.
Yeah, and that's what I'm on about.
I go and have a straight room with anyone, but I don't really want to fancy someone with like 10 kitchen fucking knives, you know what I mean?
I think it's the gameness, because anyone can carry a knife, but not everyone's got the capability to kill.
And
who kill, like really, this might sound crazy, but there's people who carry knives and their intention's not to kill anyone. And they get into this mad scruffle and fight. And then they end up stabbing them out of fear sometimes. Didn't intend to kill them. And then they're like, it's not in them.
Well, nine times out of ten, it's like if you corner a rat, it'll attack. And that's basically, when you've got a knife, nine times out of ten, people aren't carrying it to go and actually hurt someone. They're carrying it so they
defense,
don't get hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then when it kicks off, something happens. But because of that, afterwards, they've just got to big themselves. Yeah, I'm a murderer. Yeah, I've done this. No, when they're in jail. But the truth is, it's not in them. Whereas there's people who it is. And that was me. Like, I daydreamed it. Literally daydreamed about killing people on a daily basis.
Were you stuck it? Did you have a limit of, like, you thought, I'll just put half the knife in?
No, I just did it, yeah. I was asked a question when I was interviewed for the news thing. The man said to me, would you have been bothered if you killed him? And my instant reaction at the time was, no.
That's what I was going for.
That was my intention. Yeah. You know, you don't stab someone in the head because you want to. The only thing is, I was a bit clueless at the time, didn't realise that the head probably is the hardest part of the body. You know, if you want to kill someone, I better stop cutting it.
It must have been a good knife, though, you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't one from Iceland today, was it? It was bent. Oh, fuck.
It was a good one, yeah. My favourite ones I used to like was like them Rambo knives.
Mm.
And they've got a compass on the top.
Oh, yeah.
And you can unscrew them, and you normally have matches and all that in.
Oh, fishing
wire. I used to have them. I used to like walking about with them as well. I used to love them.
Commando knives, aren't they?
Yeah. Because it's like, it's weird, because obviously I must have been mentally ill, because I would look at knives as it, like they were like a god. This might sound like I would sit and stare at them and turn them round. And I remember being in a party. I killed the buzz. Everyone's wrecked. Listen to this. Well, everybody's wrecked. This is funny, this. And there's some handy lads in there as well. They're all wrecked. And I pulled my knife out because it was new. And it was one of them Rambo ones. And I'm turning it. I'm looking at it. And I forgot where I was. I actually forgot where I was. And I'm turning the knife round. And then I just got this urge, like, go and kill someone. So I looked up and I went, owie, let's go and kill someone. And everyone was all on the ends of the city like that, all crumpled up to one side. And they were just, like, staring, no fear. And one of them just slowly come up to me and went, owie, mate, you're killing the buzz, and took the knife out of my hand. And then, you know, and this is what I was like. I was a bit just mentally ill.
Yeah.
I wasn't no criminal. I wasn't no gangster. I wasn't anything, just mentally ill. And people just avoided me like the plague. And that's it. And that's all I was, you know.
Did they pill you up for that? Did they give you, like, Thorazine in the route?
I've been under the mental... I was sectioned off.
Mm-hmm.
I got sectioned off. It used to be called St. Luke's at the time in Middlesbrough. And I was sectioned in there. I got sectioned in there because the police said... I had no fear against the system. I had no... So, like, I even remember pulling a knife out on the police officer.
It's the worst place you can go, though, isn't it? Section 18s. It's like, it's fucking hell. It's like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's fucking nest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've met some characters.
Why did you pull a knife on the cop?
Because I just didn't. I thought, like, they're authority, Anne, and I thought, I'm not running from you. I'm not scared of anybody, so you think I'm going to run? I remember having some videos. This is crazy as well. I'd just burgled a house with somebody, and the police come, and they skidded the car, and everyone scattered. That's a normal thing for a normal person to do.
You've got to get away. Yeah.
So I'm walking along as if they're mine. He's like, can you come here? I was like, no. He's like, so get off. He's like, oh, we've just had a wee loss. Take your hands off the knife. Take your hands off him. And I chucked them all on the floor, pulled my knife out and ran towards him, and he was running around the car. And then that's the first time psychiatrists sort of started getting involved in my life.
Should have showed up a Blockbuster card.
And then the other one was I had a gun, and I just wanted to see what someone would be like. And so it was a security guard in Middlesbrough Town Centre, and the football thingy was on, football game. And I pulled the gun out on the security guard, and he ran at us, made me run away.
He ran at you?
Did you?
He ran at me, and I ran off. I was only young at the time.
Is that what Cockle said? If it's a gun, run at him. If it's a knife, run off.
Yeah.
Is that what
you
said? He ran at me, but it panicked me because I was flipping neck, and I wasn't going to do out, but it was just to scare him. And I had armed police raid my mum's house. I had the armed police all over the place. Just daft little things I used to do, just absolutely off me, not really.
Brian said that in his last interview. He said, if someone pulls a gun at you, run at him. If someone pulls a knife, run away.
I'll just say run on both. That's what I think to do. Or get on your knees and say sorry. Do you know?
So these are fascinating stories, good grief. But the question was, you told us now about these arrests for attempted murder. You became in the top six most dangerous prisoners in the UK. How did that come about then?
Because I refused to listen to the system. I hated the system. I just hated authority, really. But what I didn't like is, look, if you're a prison officer and you're sound, you're doing your job, good. But you get them ones who put a white shirt on and they've got power behind them because they've got 20 million prison officers behind them, and they just become dogs, really. And there was this one, I loved my gym at the time, and in Home House Prison at the time, where I was, you had to press the buzzer. Your cell buzzer went, they'd come to the end of the wing and shout, Jim.
Jim, yeah.
And you'd press your buzzer and they'd come and open the door of everyone who pressed the buzzer.
Same with church, wasn't it?
Yeah, they weren't doing that for me. So they weren't opening my door.
Bastards.
So I pressed the buzzer the first time. He says, how come you're not opening your door? He went, oh, I'll make sure I do it next time. So the next time comes, press my buzzer, doesn't even come on my landing. Thought, they're not doing this to me.
Was the reason they were messing with you like that?
Probably just because I was running around the jail, like causing havoc and getting involved in...
They don't like you getting big either.
Yeah, well, I did get involved. I was getting, like, I don't want to make it sound like I was a fit, like, doing out, but I was, like, muscling in on people as well, like, bullying people and saying, hey, give me some drugs, hey, I want this, I want...
You'll do it, fucking 19 stone, yeah, fucking Rick, you know what I mean?
Just a nutcase. Fuck it. And basically, they just didn't like me, and they didn't like the fact that I wouldn't listen to them, and I was always running my mouth, And anyway, they weren't letting me out. So what I did, I waited till I saw the officer who I wanted on the wing. And I pressed my buzzer and he come. I says, what about the gym? I said, you said you'd let me out. He went, oh, what a pity. I said, see you. I said, you're dead. I said, I want to get you. He went, oh, whatever. I've heard it all before. I says, we'll see. Okay, then. So instantly started setting up a plan. And I went out on association, and associations when all the inmates go out and play pool, get a shower, do whatever they do, and they mingle on the wing.
Yeah.
And that's what association is. And
Watch your bit of TV till a fight goes off.
And then use the TV. Yeah. And then they had these big, massive coffee jars, like glass coffee jars. And it was the only thing I had at hand, dead quick to think about. As soon as the door opened on association, I got that, wrapped it in a towel, and had it as if I was going into the showers. Walked on the bottom landing where all the playing pool. And I went up to two lads and I said, look, you know if you kick off, anything kicks off, them officers, because they always stand near the gates to get on and off the wing if anything happens. I said, you know they're going to get off the wing.
Shit houses like that. Yeah. They stand right near the gates as well, on either side.
So I said to them, go to them and just talk to the officers. So when it kicks off, just stand in front of the gate so they can't get off the wing. So that's what he did. They went over, they're chatting away at the officer. He thinks having a normal chat. And then I went up to another lad from Pete Lee and I said, right, start chucking pool balls at the officer, or screws, we'd call them. And he went, I don't know, man. I says, listen, mate. I said, you want respect or not? And I knew him from on the out. And he was like, I don't know. I says, look, just do it, man. And he did. He said, okay, then. So I stepped back. I said, I'll deal with everything else. I said, you chuck the pool balls once it kicks off, I'll deal with the rest. He did. Started chucking the pool balls at the officer. Officer jumped up, went to get off the wing. The lads have jumped in the front of him, stopped him getting off. He's pulled his bat on and ran towards the inmate who was fingering the pool balls. At this point, I pulled out the coffee jar, smashed the bottom off, and I ran up to him and just started stabbing him. He was putting his hands up, so I was going for his face and his neck, but he put his hands up, and so I'm catching his hands because he's blocking,
yeah.
And then I'm trying to get him in his stomach, and then he's putting his legs up, and I've trapped him into the corner, and I just started just going wild and trying to stab him wherever I could stab him, and I was cutting my own hands as well, you know, like bit little cuts, though, where I've had hold of it, and it's all, the glass is smashing. And then another officer come. They say I stabbed them, but at this point, you're in like a frenzy, aren't you? You don't know what's going on. So I don't know. He says I did. They got me on the floor. And actually, they didn't get me on the floor. I went down. So I've done what I needed to do. And then I've just put the stuff down. I've just laid down, put my hands up. They've come, grabbed all my arms, got me head, did all that rubbish to do. And then one of the officers picked my arm up, put it on the glass because there was a bottom of the glass that was still stuck up, and there was like one bit sticking up on that round circle at the bottom. And he's got my arm there, and that was like bone, do you know what I mean? He put it on and he went, you, boom, and just with his knees just bounced on my hand. Didn't make a noise, didn't even feel it, to be truthful. And that was because my adrenaline was gone.
Yeah.
And I was so full of pride at the time, I don't want them to hear a noise come out of me. And I just basically looked up at them, and it must have scared them, this. Because I looked up at them, didn't make a noise, and I just went, see you. I said, when I get you for this, you're going to die. I'm going to kill you. I'm coming after your family. And that's what I said to them. And then anyway, I go to the hospital. I get shipped to Durham Prison. Went to Durham Prison. They started messing about with me. See, once you do a prison officer, that's it. You're a different ball game. Different ball game to the officers. It's like everywhere you go, it's like, you want to mess with one of us? Let's go. We're going to mess with
Durham's
you.
Old school as well, yeah. Isn't it?
Couldn't break me, though. They couldn't break me.
No.
What did they do to you there, then?
In that jail, I went to a top security prison. So I got chucked out of there quick. Cartier van. I wasn't Cartier, but they chucked me on a Cartier van, and they took me to Frankland, top security prison, Frankland. Went to Franklin, he took me straight to the segregation unit.
Did the Midnight Express, like, just the middle of the night?
Yeah, just cut you. No, straight away. No, there was an incident where I got a weapon and threatened, like, jumped out. Now I jumped out the cell with a weapon, and I went, boo! And all the officers all just jumped back, and they were all, like, stood there. I went, here. And they went, because they were winding me up, and they put me on basic and took all my stuff off me, so they thought I couldn't get weapons. So I made a weapon out of something.
You haven't got your TV. You haven't got your...
No, I didn't make a weapon. Do you know the lights have got long lights
on the
top? And they've got special screws in. But I've sussed, what you do is you burn the end of a toothbrush, and then you just, when it's all fully melted, I would just squash it onto it so it would mould the shape of the screw. So and then I unscrewed them. So I had the metal end, the metal end of it instead. So I had it behind my back, and I sort of, when they come to the door, went, boo, and they've all jumped back, and they stood there, and I was going, hey, come and get it. I said, listen very carefully. I said, if I was going to do something, your head had I'd already caved your skull in. I said, this is just a warning, stop winding me up. Finally, one of them come, got it. Within 5-10 minutes, I just heard a Cartier van, reversing up, and I was took from Durham Prison into a top security prison, Frankland. Went there, took straight to the segregation unit because I was still under the prison officer. So every prison I went, I was still on charges with stabbing the prison officers. So every prison I went, it was straight to the seg.
You're going to get shit, aren't you?
Oh, I got hammered. Straight to the seg. It was all right at first, and then they started winding me up, and I thought, sack it, let's go to the war.
And when you say winding you up, what did they specifically
do? Just doing stuff like turning your lights on and off, when you're going to sleep, banging your door, keeping you awake.
At games.
Just playing with your mind, you know what I mean? And just doing stuff. So I just thought, you know what, sack it, let's go. And then I ended up battling on a daily basis. They would come in, they would put ballys on, so I didn't know who they were. So I couldn't retaliate and stuff. And they'd come in with ballys on, and just 6 or 7 of them with a riot gear. I'd be laid on my bed, just fast asleep. They'd just come running in, boom, handcuffed. Like, you can fight for so long, doesn't matter who you are. You can only fight 6-7 men in riot shields. for so long before the you're knackered and you have to get down.
That's
which
you
know what
they
do
right now.
They got me down and they'd handcuff me, and when they had me handcuff me, then they'd go up, do stuff. Like one of them, I'll tell you one occasion what happened. This one time I was in a camera cell, and they said to me, "Right, come out." And I used to go through a process because I ended up on as a CSC prisoner in the close supervision circuit. But not on the unit or anything. It's where you're going from like seg to seg in the top security prison. And you go in these cells where they've got a hatch. So you have, it's 23 hours bang up. When they'd open your door, you has to be 6 or 7 prison officers in riot gear or they can't open your door. And then you have to go through a process. So I'd have to lie on the floor and put my hands up before they'd open the door. Then they'd slam the door open. Then they'd put the shield to the door. Then they'd come, put the shield on your back, tell you to put your hands off your head, and then a man with riot gear on that side would search your body, and he would search you. Then they'd run to the back to the door, and then they'd say, "Right, stand up slowly." If you went fast at any time, they'd be on you. So you slowly got to get up, and then slowly walk back till your back touches the, then you the shield. Then they'd step back, then they'd step to shield, then you'd step aside, then they'd push you up against the wall, and you'd be searched again. And that was just to go on the exercise yard. Then you'd have to walk backwards as slow as you possibly can until you got to the exercise yard. Then they'd get you the exercise yard, tell you to lay down. You'd lay down on the floor, put your hands on your head, and then they'd shout, "Go, go, go, go," and everyone would just run. But I would try and get up and run at them. So as soon as the shield was off me, I would get up and I would run.
You didn't do yourself any favours, did you, mate?
Really? I hate the system. I didn't do myself any favours at all. In fact, I come to the realisation that what was I expecting? Listen, I used to believe every time I commit a crime, it's their fault, he grasped me up. It's his fault, oh, he's this. Oh, it's the prison officer's fault, he locks the door. No, I committed the crime. So I'm in jail because I put myself in jail. It's not their fault. Now, here's another thing. I experienced a lot of brutality. Like, I'm talking about, like, serious brutality. And
What was the worst brutality?
One of them was, they got me in a... They took, like I was saying, I went through that process and they said to me this one time, and I didn't click at first. They said, "Go into the next room, next cell, we're going to search your script searcher." So I go to the next cell and I go to the back wall and I'm stood there for a couple of seconds and I just thought, this isn't right. And all of a sudden the shield just went bang off my back. And what they counted on is to grab my hands, because as soon as my hands touched the wall, They were there, they had hold of my arm. Man with right gear there, one with right gear there. But what they didn't count on was me not taking my hands off the wall and slide my hands down the wall. So I slid my hands down the wall, turned, grabbed one of the legs and picked them up and fell with them. Then I've pushed with my legs. These are all beating me up, kicking me. And they pushed me I pushed them into the corner with my legs. And we're in between a metal toilet and the door. He's got his right gear on. And I remember these are boot me, pull it, they have a thing of pulling your head back, grabbing your throat and making it so you can't breathe. And then just as you think you're going to die, they'll let go to get you a bit of breath and you go, that feeling like you're drowning, where your body goes into a panic. But they were trying to do all sorts to get me off them, which I get, I understand that. But I remember getting my hands. I blanked all that out and I had my hands so far up his shield on his thing. And all I remember doing is looking at him and I just whispered to him and said, "Do not let me get my hands on your neck today, because you were not going to home to see your family." And he started panicking. And so did the other officers. And then he started kicking me all over. And then what happened is finally you give up. You can only go so far. And then they put the handcuffs on me. And I sort of wished I carried on fighting, because they put the handcuffs on me and they tortured me for days. Absolutely tortured me. I mean, like, just coming in, batting me all, and calling me a coward. So while I'm handcuffed on the floor,
shit out,
they're all coming in doing all this, about 10 of them. And I'm handcuffed and I'm the coward.
Yeah.
Crazy,
right,
isn't it? Fully grown men, 10 of them. And they would come in and just beat me to a pulp, you know what I mean? Punch me all over, and they would just another thing, food. So they would get like the food, they would come and just chuck it on the floor, just leave you there handcuffed for days on end, and that you can't do out, you can't get up, because they put them on my feet as well, put them on my back.
Shouldn't you see can't you as move. A dog.
Well, that's
you're
the
getting
way.
Punished for your punishment is actually being in there, and that's it. They should treat you as a human being. In Walton, what they used to do is they'd mufti squad you. If you were being an arsehole, they'd literally put you in a cell, and they'd have, you know, the little thin mattresses they have.
Yeah,
they'd have a couple of them. They'd roll you up in them, and they'd fucking beat the shit out of you. And basically, what it did was
it's made
it
me
bruise
worse.
All your insides, but you don't actually see the bruises on the outside. Do you know what I mean?
All it did with me is made me worse, and it just set all that just made me, just the enemy now. And I just went through this process of every single time my door opened, we were fighting. And in the end, they were coming to me and saying, look, at they're not going to break me. This is what I thought. You're not breaking me. I'd hear like fully grown men who were meant to be faces down south and all that and like screaming like girls. And then that's it. That's like that. But me, it would make me angry. I'd go to the door and go, what are you doing, you idiot? You're showing us up. And I would just, they'd come in. And like try and, you know, do the chicken, try and twist you up.
The chicken.
And they would, and I wouldn't make a noise. Look, it would kill inside. I was like, ah, do you know what I mean?
But
not one,
them.
Not, I would stay as calm as possible. And they would beat me and I would stay calm. They started sending psychiatrists. They would come to the door and saying, there's something wrong with you. Like, we can't break you. And I was like, you'll never break me. Come on. It's what, like, I was in my own mental mind, my own mental state. And then from then, I remember going to Wakefield segregation. I went into Wakefield. So I went from Franklin, then Full Sutton, Whitemore, Longlack. These are all the top security prisons in the our estate at the time, because they obviously changed sometimes. And I just, I remember going to the...
Whitemore's a hellhole, isn't it? I've never been, but I've heard it's
Whitemore's... I like Whitemore. It's got a gym on the wing and everything, man.
Oh,
the gym and that. Yeah, I liked it. And you can, in the dispersal system, listen to this, in a maximum security prison, right? And anyone who's been in a top security prison will know this. You can only go to the office and hire out a 9-inch kitchen blade and walk around the wing.
Wow.
Because you can cook on the wing. So they've got cookers. You've got like a kitchen on your wing in a multi-gym in Whitemore, a multi-gym. You go and train when you want, you cook, and all the lads cook. You can order pots and pans, and do you know what I mean?
That's fucking mad.
But you can go and order. There's like, they've got like three or four for a wing, or like two nights, and people are walking around. You're in a top security prison, right? Can you imagine the tension just off that? You're in a top security prison, right? And full of killers, gangsters, gang members. And the you can walk around with a 9-inch kitchen blade.
Were people getting
swilled?
How crazy is that? Like what I mean by swill is?
Yeah, I know.
Like with water and the sugar boiled.
Well, it started off you were allowed oil.
Fucking hell.
Until a prison officer got swilled with oil and got his face melted off.
Yeah.
And then he banned oil. So what the lads do now is they make what you call ghee. And so you get loads of butter. You buy a load of butter, just put the butter in, you melt it, and then you pour all the bad out and you've got oil. There's oil and butter in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then you use that to pick, you start swilling people with that. Or the sugar and water, because the sugar sticks, so
sticks.
It's worse for your skin. But the main one in the dispersals was oil. So when, this is what's funny, so when someone would start walking, because all the, in Whitemore, all the tables are on the bottom floor, and everyone would just be sat mingling around. This is the tension, right? If a lad started walking down the stairs and he had a pan, the whole landing would disappear. Everyone would go behind the doors.
Yeah,
we used to anyway. you just look through the gap. I used to just look through
so
the gap.
Right,
just wait for he's going past. And I think, oh, it's not me. Right. And that's the tension, what it used to be. And I met some really big people in the dispersal prisons, or like powerful, like big faces and stuff.
Do you mean shit slingers too? In America, you know a lot of shit slingers.
Yeah. Well, I didn't meet, there was only Pacific people I associated with because I didn't take drugs. I didn't do anything. So I was on the ball. I'd just keep myself to myself. If it came to me, then I would do something. But it's mainly my battle was against the system and officers setting me up.
I'm surprised some of the main heads didn't put you on a payroll though to go and collect for them.
No, it was because it's not like that in a dispersal. See, the dispersal and maximum security prisons are very different. And so you don't have a one hard man who stands out. You don't have a one crazy man who stands out.
They're all crazy.
They're all capable.
They're all different.
Everyone,
they're
there's,
all
a there's a tension.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that everyone's capable of doing stuff. And an example, the way I can explain it.
Get more respect that way, though.
No, because the way to explain it is this. So you've got Newcastle.
Yeah.
There's a few hard lads from Newcastle, a few faces from Newcastle, and they're in a maximum security prison on the wing.
Yeah.
But then you'll have faces from Manchester and big boys from Manchester who are on the wing.
Red
and
car,
Liverpool. And so it's full of hard cases. And it's full of people who it doesn't matter who you are, if you challenge them, they're going to battle you.
Yeah.
So that's not how it works. It's just like everyone's in it. You get on with your deal. And if you have to, then you deal with whatever comes your way. But 9 times out of 10, people are getting on. People are just cooking together, getting on a bit. You get the odd idiot who come on, and sometimes they'll get told, chill out. You know, you're not in a
young lad's jail. Yeah.
You're not in a daft jail now. You'll end up getting yourself sorted out, and then everyone just chills out. But when it does kick off, it kicks off. So you've just got local, basically, say it like this: local hard lads and local faces from all over the country, all stuck in one pot.
Yeah.
So it's not like a person who's like, oh, look at him, stands out, oh, he's dangerous. If people don't do that in a dispersal, everyone's dangerous.
Exactly, yeah.
So there's a different, like, mentality. No one could come to me and try and take out off me, but no one could go to most people and try and take. You do get the odd divs who could be bullied and intimidated, but it's just full of lifers, full of faces, full of, well, not when I was in, but the IRA, there's people like that who were in.
Surprised you're not getting fucked up, to be fair, like.
Don't get
fucked up, the IRA.
No, they were. I wasn't in when they were fully in. I was only in when there was a few splinter group people.
They're powerful
because they had the. Well, what I've heard they were because they were the taught solidarity and they stuck together and there was lots of them and what they could do on the outside as well. So even prison officers would tell me that the IRA, like, they'd be out drinking and they'd be approached by two people and. You know what I mean? If you keep intimidating, blah, 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 we're going to shoot you dead and stuff. So this is from officers who've told me this themselves.
And your family's dead.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So, yeah. But I never, there was a peace talks that went on just before, the Good Friday thing, wasn't there? And all the IRA were released, but there was a few splinter group ones who were in there who didn't agree with the peace talks and they were still bombing and that at the time, and a few of them were in. So yeah, met loads, crazy people, but...
So earlier on, you said you met our mate Stephen, who we interviewed recently.
Stevie Gillen.
Yeah, yeah. And he described the atmosphere how you just described it.
Yeah, just tension.
But how did you, being a paranoid person then, with that tension, how did your paranoia, didn't it feed the paranoia?
No, because I was a bit sensible. I take there was a lad who come in, right, and he was from Nottingham Way. He's called Michael Westwood. Actually, I'm trying to find Michael Westwood, so if you see this, try and find me in up north Middlesbrough, I live.
No, we'll have all your contact details in the description box if people want to contact you.
So basically, I met up with this lad, Michael Westwood, and he was having trouble with two gangs, one called the Johnsons and one called the Burger Bars. And Michael was in jail for supplying guns, and he got caught with a factory making bullets and all that. So he got a big stretch, but he was massive. And he was having trouble, and I remember going up to him and teaming up. I just went up and walked into his cell. I said, I've noticed you've got trouble with everyone. I says, you have my back and I'll have yours. He went, what do you mean that? I says, listen, mate, I said, I've got your back. I said, but have you got mine? He said, yeah, I've got your back. From then on, we were like that. So we're never away, you know what I mean? And he was like, you think I'm big? He was like 22 stone or something, solid, like just a big lad, half-caste lad, just absolutely massive, game as can be. You know, we nearly had a fight with the officers and that over a Rocky Biscuit. You know, that's how game he is. Because we went to the server.
Nice Rocky Biscuits, yeah. Though, aren't they?
But no, well, it's a principle.
Yeah.
Everyone had got served on the survey. We went there last because we were a bit late and was like, where's my biscuit? Everyone else has had one. You know what I mean? You can't let them take the mick like that because they'll keep doing it. So he was like, where's my biscuit? And there was a big, massive standoff. Over a Rocky Biscuit, chocolate Rocky Biscuit. Oh, my dad.
People who serve on the savouries, though, they censor that like it's their fucking food.
Yeah, I know. I know. Crazy, isn't it?
So how did the standoff play out?
Well, just it played out with this prison officer from the block was on and he didn't realise. Because when they're on the block, they individually can deal with you, see. When you're on the wing, it's the wing. So what happened was is he said to him, do you know who I am as an officer? And that Michael Westwood was like, he got mad and he went into his face. He went, do you know who I am? And then, like, all the other inmates come flying behind us because there's a little bit of, like, everyone sticks together in that sense. And then all the officers come and it was like a standoff for a bit and then they calmed down and started saying, right, everybody back to the wing, please. And they made a line and, like, we were walking through, like, a a line of them all, no staring at us, probably thinking, yeah, going to get it, you, would you know? And went through, and that was it, really. We were expecting to get took to the second, that, and they didn't.
All they had to do was go and get the fucking Rocky Biscuits to Daft Cunts. Oh, really? I like those with caramel meat.
So basically, I teamed up with Pacific people who I knew had me back, and they had mine. And that was it, and we would just be together at all times. And the tension was that big for us, and we were that paranoid. So the paranoia was still there. But when you know someone's looking after you, so this is how bad it was. When we were in the gym training, if anyone come walking towards the bench, we'd have to say, someone's coming. And we'd put the bench down, we'd stand up and wait for them going past. Like, it was just like little things we had.
Was it free weights?
Yeah, free weights, yeah. Like, proper, as if you're in the gym on the out. And that was it. Then I met that, who you just said. I wasn't really friends in that sense. Like, I didn't get to know him like I did with Michael. But Stevie Gillen, he was like, how I met him was he must have some money, the lad, because I had a lot of money saved up in my canteen. And he basically, he come to me and said, look, he said, I'll send you £200 for £100. That's how we first ever, like, sort of chatted. He approached me with a bawly-looking, tough-looking lad. Look like a fighter. I think he's called John James from London. I think he's a traveller, I don't know, so I couldn't say, but John James' name was. And he's well-known, meant to be a face and stuff. And they both just approached me, and he was just like, look, you know, you want a little deal? I've heard you got loads of money on your canteen. He says, I'll send you £200 in a week if you just get me £100 canteen. Sweet. I thought, well, I'm not going to turn that down, you know what I mean? So we did that for a little bit, and then I got chipped out, and then I re-met him again in a different prison and stuff like that, but that's...
Just a few things for the viewers then. We've done over 3-hour podcast with Stephen Gillen. It's in the True Crime Podcast playlist. Go down and check it out. Chet Sandu was co-interviewing on that one as well, down south. It was a real laugh. It was a real good energy. And you mentioned, Shane mentioned the Burger Bar Boys. We interviewed ex-undercover cop Neil Woods, who's campaigning to reverse the war on drugs. He's doing good work now. We've got a clip on the channel about the Burger Bar Boys. He's explaining how he went undercover. And the kind of stuff they did, because they were really notorious, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, yeah. So there's a lad in there called China. I don't know which side he was on. He was nicknamed China as well. So if any of the Birmingham people will know who I'm on about when I say China. So he got done for killing a police officer. So they were a bit like game. And at the time as well, I'm sure two girls were killed from drive-by shooting. It was big on the news.
Yeah.
So all that was going on at the time as well. And I don't know what his beef was, Michael Westwood's beef. He was a big lad. He was a gun supplier. And he, I don't know what his beef was, but he was always having beef with them. But it was like a beef where they three or four gang members were running in and he was chasing them back out and chasing them down the landing because he's like 20-odd stone. Game, really tough lad. Game. So any time they were trying to attack him, he was always getting the better of them.
Couldn't take him one-on-one,
well, they couldn't even. There was three or four of them who ended up running out.
Yeah.
And I would hear of this, he'd go to another jail, and three or four lads would run in his cell, like gang members would run in his cell trying to attack him, and he'd come running out with his top ripped off, chasing them down the landing. So he's meant to be a proper... I'm sure people who's been involved in that life, if they watch this, they know who Michael Westwood is. They'll know who he is.
The Burger Bar Boy. I've never heard of that. I don't know about that.
It's all drug gangs now that are taking over everything.
Lad, are they like the ice cream was?
Michael O'Brien.
That was a Glasgow old school one.
A lad called Michael O'Brien.
Michael O'Brien.
I met up with a lad called Billy Tobin, an old man. And he used to do yoga. He used to go on the exercise yard and sit there all the way in a handstand for an hour.
Seriously?
Just... in a handstand, not even if you went even, he's going, yoga. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, he's lost it in.
You do that, don't you?
So I have met a lot. I tell you, I met who, like infamous, you'd say, kind of thing, is that Black Panther, a Black Panther man.
Which one's that?
He's the one who was doing all robberies. There's a documentary on that real crime thing. Kenny Noyle. I didn't meet him in the sense of chatting, but I'd said he used to walk around the. In Whitemore, he was on the exercise yard in Whitemore.
I've seen a documentary about him on Vice.
Which one's that? Kenneth Noyle?
Yeah.
So him, he's a big, big. There was loads of people.
What crimes had the Black Panther done?
So what he'd done is he did loads of robberies, and at the end he kidnapped a young lass, and he tied her up under this thing, and it all went wrong. He demanded a ransom, a £1 million ransom, I don't know, a big ransom. But what he didn't realise is she'd slipped or something had happened, and she, when they went back, she was dead. Mm. So like, and then he kept doing robberies and doing mad stuff, and they called him the Black Panther. I don't know why, but I don't know what that's all about. Obviously, the IRA, there's, think of every criminal you can think of. They're all in the dispersal prison, really.
Charles Bronson, do you have any...
Charles Bronson is... So when I was going through the CSC stage of going from seg to seg, I went in Wakefield, so there's levels. So he'll have been in Wakefield unit. But the thing is, you don't see him. You don't see... It's isolate. You're isolated off. It's different.
Yeah.
And so the one I was in, so he'll have been in the full cage. I think he's in the one where it'll have been like a cell and the full cage inside. But I was in the one where it's... Because there's like stages.
So he's a prison within a prison?
Yeah. Right, no. Because how that works is... You've got a prison within a prison, then isolation within the prison within a prison.
Yeah, so, I know what you mean.
So,
yeah.
So it's like, so I was in the segregation bit where they had like a, so in a normal prison, you've got your cell door, haven't you? And then you've got your cell door, and then in the one I was in, you've got a cell door, so they would open that door. Then you've got a cage door as well, so bars. And then... The next level would be like, and there's all levels, but Charlie's, it's a prison unit, and that's for the, like, very serious people. And you don't have to be violent. So you can get more violent to people in a dispersal prison.
Yeah.
Who's not on a unit, but 10 times more violent there than people who are on the unit. So you can go on a unit just
simply, psychopaths.
No, you can go on the unit simply because of how high profile of a, Ian Huntley. He's nothing. And in fact, he'd be in danger if he went on the normal wings. But he would have to go on a unit simply because his crime's so high profile.
Yeah.
That he has to be kept away from people. And that's how it is. You don't have to be. It just, or you could be top, top mafia boss or a top, top criminal.
So it's not necessarily violent. It's
who
like
you are. Who's your status? Have you got million? You could be a multi-billionaire and go on it because you've got the money.
Yeah.
To have people have your escape. So you would go into a unit. So it's not necessarily for how crazy you are. And there's, yeah. So basically, yeah.
They thought me and Sean had it
so
like
I haven't personally, basically met Charlie. I haven't personally met Charlie Bronson and stuff like that. But I've been on the sort of wings. He'll have been there and stuff like that. But you don't see. Because when your door gets opened up, you're on your own.
Can't you get a job? Can't you like work in the kitchen or?
Well, I couldn't get it.
Porter, clean, whatever.
I was on I was in a seg. I was segregated off for 6 years, 5 or 6 years.
Cool.
On my own, battling. Can you imagine what that does to your mental health? Battling the prison officers daily.
You made that 6 to 7, probably like 20 fucking years, man.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It sped me.
I enjoyed it.
No, in the end, you get used to it. And when I was getting ghosted out all the time from prison to prison, you get bored with your prison. When you sat in the same prison for years on end, it gets boring.
Yeah.
So when they were moving me every couple of months, it was like, oh, buzzing. It was like, oh, back in here. But they weren't putting me on the wings and they were using excuses up all the time. They were using loads of excuses up not to let me on the wing. So I'd go into prison and they legally, if you've done nothing in that jail, they should be putting you on the wing. And you prove yourself in there. If you want to be an idiot, then you go back down. I was going straight from one prison, straight from the seg. I was met, Wakefield, they're tough them though. They try and intimidate you. So I was met coming off the van. They had shields. They were thingying me into the wing with shields all the way onto the wing. And they were behind the shields and they had the chungeons and we were going, yeah. And me, idiot, I was going, yeah, like handcuffed up. Because you get yourself in a mindset. Like, you're never going to beat the system, but I can understand where Charlie Bronson, like, why he's in jail and he's never going to get out. Because they put you in a mindset where you just get yourself into this war with them. And they hurt you and destroy you and brutalise you that much.
Did you ever
that
get
in the
to
end,
where
you just
want
revenge. If you can get one of them, you'll get them.
Did you ever get to where you just wanted to grease yourself up and go fight with the company?
Done all that. Yeah, with the shampoo and butter and... that, well, what I was... Than that, that's actually, I've actually mentioned that in my book.
Yeah.
There was a time when what I did is I put butter all over myself, and I got shampoo, put it all over the floor, screws come running in, and they were all over the place, and it made me fight last longer with them. And in fact, they were pulling each other out. No, because they're like, we're all over, so they were pulling each to get out, yeah. And I'm at the door, yeah. So this is how crazy. No, that's in my book. Everybody, all people, any criminal who's been through the system, who have fought against the officers, will have done that. Guaranteed. Charlie Bronson, I don't know, any other, probably Stevie. I don't know if he's went through the system like that, but he'll probably be able to tell you that. All the inmates do that, butter themselves up and like...
Make sure that's a crab or anything on it.
Yeah, just slip off when the shield, because the shield's plastic, isn't it? So it just hits you and goes, and you're like, ah, jump on them. And you're jumping on top of them and, you know, just fight and battle. And it's just, that's the way the system is. That's the way it is if you go down that route. And you imagine this, it's a bit like trying to, it's getting one. If you can beat one little one, even if you get one of them and hurt one of them, out of 20 battles you have, you got one of them and you feel like there's a victory. Do you know what I mean? I got you. Ha. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it's the stuff what goes on. It's the talk, it's the handcuffing you up and while you're handcuffed. Like, and I don't mean a little slap. You know what I mean? Like, coming in and doing dodgy stuff and like just doing stuff and like coming in and grabbing your throat and doing it for about half an hour though. So your body's going into a panic. And there's been times where I have felt that they're going to kill us. And I've wrote letters to my mum saying, "Mum, if I'm ever found hanged," not saying they would, but in my head, the things that was happening, I'd write letters to my mum to say, "Mum, if I'm ever hanged, if I'm ever found dead, I never killed myself. These have done it. I will never kill myself. Keep that in mind, you know." And I would have letters sent out like that.
That must be a horrible feeling, that, though. You see,
like you're drowning.
So you see, like, that water torch, you know, they put a rag on
it. It is, yeah.
Pour the fucking thing.
That's what they were doing.
God.
So they'd do it, and just as you think you're going out and your body's panicking, they'd let go, and you'd go, and before you could get a breath, they'd do it again. They kept doing it to me for ages, absolutely ages.
I fucking hate that, man. It's
scary.
It's one of the scariest things to drown as well.
Yeah.
No, you can't breathe. I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, and because I've got, like, I think it's a sleep apnea or something it's called, and sometimes I don't breathe while I'm sleeping. I could go on for ages, and then I just wake up and go, and get my breath, you know what I mean? I'm not dying it out. I don't know what it is, but it's just like fucking, it's a horrible feeling, though.
And that's what they did to me for a long time. They did it, and did it, and do you know what?
How did you get used to it? Well, you don't get used to it, but how did you cope with it? Realise that
thinking of how can I get them back next time this door opens?
Wow, man. You were hardcore, weren't you, really?
I don't know. I was just mentally ill. And when they were doing what they were doing to me, it was making me more hate them. Like, they would beat me, which would probably make most men cry, even tough men. But I wouldn't make a noise out of them. They started sending psychiatrists. And it wasn't that it wasn't hurting me. It was that I so hated them. I thought, I'm not giving them the satisfaction of hearing me scream like a girl. You'd hear fully grown men, I've heard fully grown men screaming. They're meant to be gangsters outside, screaming their heads off a kicking off them. And I'm like, I've been down the seg for nearly a year, suffered it on a daily basis and haven't heard a noise.
I've heard them scream where they've just been chicken winged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. And like, yeah. Like girls as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, what are you doing? Stop. Isn't it? Because them officers would be like, can you imagine them going in the office?
Yeah.
Did you hear him there flipping there? Could be screaming like a girl, you know, giggling about it. So I wouldn't do that. The only way I can say it is you get so stuck in a rut of revenge and them hating you and you hating them that you lose track. You don't even want to get out. All you're thinking about is the next time, can I get him? And then I even started thinking, right, so they had the gear on. So I started thinking, right, I know what I'll do. Play calm, relax, and be nice. And then the tactics would lower down, so then they'd come without the shield.
They'd get one of work.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I'm being good, haven't I? It's been 2 weeks now. And they'd be like, yeah, we'll take the pads off there. And I would wait until they got right down and I'd start attacking them again. You know what I mean? Knock one of them and hit one of them or do something like that. So I was in Franklin Seg when there was he was known as a police informant called Paul Day, and he was found hanged. And there was a big investigation. into why how he was hanged, and I was in the seg then. And there's a thing on YouTube where he's like actually going through the process what I go through, but my process, if you were to watch it, was 10 times worse than his. So even if you just look at how he was going out, think 20 times worse than that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know, I can't explain. All I can say is that was my life. It was not a good place to be. And you're in a dark place as well. See, everything was a mask. So when you're on the wing and you're walking around the wing and you put a mask on and that, you're just in a it's all a mask, you know what I mean? Everything was a mask, and I was just full of hate, full of anger. He tested the system, and if I never changed, I think I'd have probably got out, because I was thinking of killing people. Like, when I was in jail, I was scared to get out, and I was thinking, right, I had a list.
How long ago was that, like when you had that list?
11 years ago, before I got out of jail.
For people watching this, he mentioned his book. His book is called Shane, and the link to that is in the description box below this video. Shane, I've sat here listening to these stories, and this is some of the most insane, craziest, gripping, hard-hitting stories I've ever heard. And we've had a lot of people on this channel, man.
Yeah, I'm memorised.
I'm just sat here like, what is he going to say next? Yeah. I'm sure the viewers are thinking that as well. I'm sure loads are going to want to go down into the description box, click over, buy your book, and get you like even more details and even more crazy stories. Yeah. Next question is then, it says here you classify as in the 6 most dangerous prisoners. So, did the Home Office have a list of 6? And would like Charles Bronson be in that, for example?
I don't know what. See, probably Charlie Bronson's obviously going to be on that.
Yeah.
But it's a list of. So what happens is do you know how I found this out?
Oh.
When I changed, and I went and did my testimony, and I bumped into a man who worked for the Home Office, and he come up to me all excited, said he couldn't believe that he couldn't believe that that I'd changed, and he said he used to sit on a board. So every year, the Home Office have a board, sit on a board, and assess the top 6 most dangerous prisoners in the country, in the UK. And they'll assess it, like, what we're going to do with them, how we're going to deal with this, what do we do? And they have this meeting once a year on how the Home Office is going to deal with these people and what they're going to do. And he said to me, you were on, and your name was always on, while you were in on that top 6 list. Now, where that was, I don't know. But they do assess the top 6 on the in the Home Office and stuff like that. And this is what he was saying to me. And then after that, I would have like people approaching me and that's where everything sort of stemmed off from then. But I didn't even know. See, I thought it was a normal. People laugh when I say this, but I thought it was normal. Now looking back, stabbing people through the head, trying to kill people and daydreaming about killing people and battling the system and stabbing 2 prison officers.
You were as mad as a box of frogs, mate.
Well, it's not normal. At the time, I thought I was. And people used to say to me, there's something wrong with you, you're mad. And it would confuse me. I'd say, well, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Because I think I'm normal.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem when someone's mentally ill. A proper mental ill person doesn't realise that they're mentally ill.
Real.
Those who realise are mentally ill. How are they realising it to be mentally ill? I don't understand that, but like a proper full-on, if you're mentally ill, you don't realise it. I just thought it was like everybody else and didn't get why people were saying I was mad.
I can understand
now
that.
Now I am. Now I know I was.
What's the worst injuries you've ever sustained in your entire life?
Broke my toe when I kicked the curb. When the screws done that to me.
Yeah.
That's about it, really.
Like when they were getting all these beatings, did they get your ribs?
That's
and stuff?
Just bruises, just daft things. Cut on my back and my head. I don't know if you can see it, but I should have where they smashed my head with a truncheon and split my head open so you can see my skull. I don't know if you can see it, but there might be a scar somewhere on the back of my head.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, what was the story behind that?
Just everyday thing, just fighting the officers. So when I charged them and got them, started winning them. One of them ran behind me, smashing me across the head with a truncheon. And I found out afterwards, legally, they're not meant to do that. But meant now to me. I'm just a scumbag criminal, so it didn't matter. But that was it. It was just that was my life on all the time. I was always fighting the prison system, and I was always battling. Because it started off, all this stemmed from being picked on and bullied until I was about 16, 17 year old, and then I just got sick of it. Even when I first went to prison as a young offender, I got bullied and taxed and all that stuff. And then after that, I just something happened in my mind. I thought, it's never going to happen again. And then I would fight back and get a big game. And then mental health kicked in. And then that just changed everything.
Sorts of people who've done young offenders, and they were like, when they first went in, they were scared. They'd have the trainees took off them and all that. Or there was one guy who was waiting to use the phone, and some guy said to him, oh, can you borrow your card? And used all his phone card and just give it him back empty. And he said, but then the next time he went in, it was a real prison. And he thought, no, that's not going to happen to me again. And he beat the shit out of the person who even tried to do it. Because everyone will try. When you first get in there, you've always got that idiot who's going to try and fucking test you and see how you react. You know what I mean?
And if you react like a div, then everyone treats you like a div.
Well, 90% of people fucking do. Did you just roll over?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you can be trained.
Yeah, I wouldn't dare.
So how bad did the bullying get in the early years then?
Oh, well, it was that bad that when I was in school, I remember the lads saying, oh, you can come and play with us. And I was getting really excited, ran towards them. When I went towards them to play with them, turned around, punched me in the face, popped my nose open.
Bastards.
And that's why I think I started, because I used to burgle houses and steal and stuff.
Yeah.
And be a little robber like that and pinch cars. And in the early 90s, it was really big for people joyriding and doing stuff like that. And I just fitted in with them. They didn't bully me as much. Even though I got bullied off them, it wasn't as much as all the other people. So just tried to fit in with everyone, really, I guess. And then do you know when you just get sick and tired of people taking the mick out of you? And I just thought, nah, I've had enough. And I even remember saying...
The thing is, they probably weren't, though. Might have just been in your head.
What's that for, the...
Like, people taking the mick?
No. They were taking the mick all the time out of me. And, like, even the older lads, would like, if there was a house and there was a little window, they'd, like, use me to get through the big... window for them. And if we got, like, £1,000 cash, they'd give me £100, and they'd have 900 and stuff, just...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm the div who's buzzing because I'm a kid, but £100 is still then, buzzing. Yeah. But when you look back on it all, that's all you ever done, all of them. You know, all just picked on me and bullied me. Yeah. And when I was older, none of them would dare. Well, I don't know about now because I'm different, but when I started getting a bit nuts, then they couldn't and they wouldn't dare.
So that was the first crimes then, like car theft and breaking in places?
Cars, burgling houses, pinching cars, robbing people. Scumbag.
What was your first arrest?
Probably a burglary.
So you went to young offenders for that?
I went to Aycliffe Secure Unit when I was, I think I was 15 or 14, and I was the first person in the North East to get Section 53'd at the time.
How did you manage that?
The Section 53 is when you've done a crime. What if you're under a certain age, you couldn't get over 2 years. But if the Section 53'd you, it meant they could give you over a 2 year sentence, and it was for aggravated burglary. So I burgled a house. And I had a knife, and the police officer come. This was when I was about 14, and the police officer come and pulled a 9-inch knife out on him. Like, my favourite knife. I pulled my 9-inch knife on him and tried to stab him. And when I was being interviewed, he said, oh, you didn't mean to try and do that. I said, I did. And I said, why? And I said, because I wanted to kill him. And so they looked at each of them and went, well, I says, and then I just looked and went dead serious. I was 14. I didn't realise what I was saying, though.
Yeah.
I was just trying to, I didn't realise what I was saying, but they took it dead serious. And I just remembered, and I went dead serious in the interview. I'm only 14, 15. And I just looked, I went, one day I'm going to kill a police officer. And they were like, you don't mean that, do you? And this is on the interview. I went, no, I mean it. I said, one day I'm going to kill a police officer. And then I didn't say it that I meant it. I was just a kid.
They should have given you help word and then, though, really.
But in the early, it's a bit like, for example, when like now they're sussing out like people who've got who are dyslexic.
Yeah.
But back years ago, people who were dyslexic, it was just like, you're dumb, you can't, you're just a daft idiot, you're dumb and stupid, and you're being made a laughing stock out of.
Yeah, exactly.
So time's gone on, maybe that would be the case. But back then in the early 90s, it wasn't like that. You didn't get no help for that. It was just like, oh, he's just another little naughty kid who was on the street, and that was it.
In America, I was classed as bipolar, but since I've been out, I've been fine. don't see red dots and nothing no more. Right. Back then I did, like.
But... Are you meant to see dots and that, like, when you've got it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I used to just see, you know, like you say, you'd start and you'd blank out.
Yeah.
And then you'd stop, eventually you'd stop, and then you just, like, it's like a red mist just goes over your eyes and it clears up. But that's how I used to be. But now nothing makes me that angry. Yeah. I sort of been there, seen it, done it, and it's a lot easier to talk your way out of it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't go out. It's another good thing. I sit in the house a fucking lot because I think to myself, if I go in a pub, someone says something.
Yeah, I'm like,
I'm a fucking woolen. So, like, I might as well just fucking, you know, sit and have a few beers and chill.
Yeah, that's why I don't drink, and I get worried that, like, people will start. Because for me, it's not the starting. It's the months of overthinking it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it'll unsettle me, and it'll unsettle my mind, and then instead of being in peace, I'm sat there for 2 or 3 years.
A fight is to fight, though, at the end of the day. If you just have a fight, but you take it one
but not when you can't... Even though I've changed, I still have this... I can cope with it and I don't react on it, but I still struggle.
Yeah.
And if people mug me off, I still feel the same. I still have the same struggle and it still lasts for a long time. I just, for some reason, know how to cope with it. Why, I know. But for some reason, I know how to cope with it now and I don't act on it. And I hope and pray that it stays like that and it never ever changes and never goes back where I do feel like sack it and I just think sack the world and back to that person, because if it does happen, then I'll have my list comes back.
You got a lady now as well, though.
Yeah, I love it a bit, yeah, and I've got me five
and
kids as well.
Kids, yeah.
But it still doesn't stop when someone mugs you off, sitting there in 6 or 7 months down. And that's what bothers me, because the people who did wind you up are out. They're the ones they'll go off and forget about you within a day.
Yeah,
you're still sat
probably
there
drunk,
2 years down the line thinking about it.
And you're stewing on it, stewing on it.
Every, like, and that's what kind of mentality I've got. But I know how to cope with it, and I've changed, and it's been 11 years, and I've never committed a crime since.
That's good.
So 11 years, you know what I mean? I've been married in that 11 years. I've got 5 kids in that 11 years, you know what I mean? It's just a totally different lifestyle altogether.
So I go in the pub now and again with your mates. But you tend to stay out of danger zones, don't you? You know for a fact, if you start hitting the fucking pub every night, eventually some dickhead's going to say something, you know what I mean?
A couple of cans in the house will do me.
Exactly, yeah.
Fosters.
Three Fosters. I desperados me.
Do you want one? I've got some there.
No, I've got to drive home.
So how did you rise up in the crime world then, from, you just described, the junior level stuff?
So it's not about, when you, again, I don't want it to sound like rise up, so some people think like he's gone from this small-time criminal to some big-time gangster mafia figure or something.
Yeah.
When you say that in the rise up, I'll put it across like this. It's when my crimes got worse. And so my crimes have gone from burgling houses, pinching cars and stuff, to then getting a little violent. When I first went to prison, I got taxed, and then something started... I started thinking, I'm had enough of this. I'm sick of people taking the mick out of me. And I started fighting back.
What got taxed?
I think it was a watch.
You know what? Let's just stop a minute and switch chairs.
Oh, go on then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very particular, aren't you, Sean?
I was going to... Okay, I'll move here then, okay.
So I got...
I was going to say switch that chair for this, but...
I got taxed with a watch. I had a good fight. I fought for it, but... I was young in jail. I was a soft. I couldn't fight. Just a bit game and a bit mad, but couldn't fight really. And then I just got fed up afterwards and I was thinking about it, like I said, stewing. And then I thought, you know what? This is it. From now on, no one's going to mug me off ever again. And then I just went down a rampage. And I remember having my first fight with someone. Well, and from then on, everyone was giving me attention. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, and talking about it. And I just remember thinking, I want this. From that moment on, I refused to back down and I just went fighting people. And I started on a small scale, not no international scale, but started selling drugs in some ways, which I'll not go into anyway, because I started selling a few drugs and stuff and then just started moving on like that. And my reputation was more just being a nutcase, really, and just going around stabbing people and trying to get a reputation for myself. I had this... thing in my head where I wanted to be feared. I wanted people to know who I was. And so I was just running around, just trying to hurt people. So if someone said to me, see him over there, no one will cross him. Like a normal person will think, oh, I'll keep away from him.
You go, oh, I'll have you.
I would feel like, what can I do now to put it on him? So I'd maybe walk past and sort of bump into him. Someone go, hey, who are you talking to? What are you doing? And I'd stab him or something. And that was what I would do, but as in, like, doing things as in, like, to, like some big-time organised criminal, I've never rose to that. I've just literally been an absolute nutter who just ran around. And if I didn't change, I'd have probably killed someone or been killed, and that's that.
You got away with it for a long time, didn't you? Stabbings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you think about doing the doors, big lad?
I wasn't big at the time, though.
Oh, right.
So I was a skinny lad when I was running around like a loony. So it's just hard to explain because there's different kinds of... I don't want it to sound like I'm saying I was like, you know, when you say, when did you rise up?
Yeah, you've made that clear.
Yeah, so...
When did you go from one knife to like just having a whole pack?
After me first stabbing because I got like a frit, like... I don't know, should I say... When I did me first stabbing and I got a feeling... And like a nice feeling, like a rush, and so like I used to after that I used to start my hairs would stand on end and I'd like think about killing people and stuff, and then I started like walk. That's it. I just got the full pack and I started having a fascination with them and then I'd just start walking around with them all around my waist and it made me feel a bit like.
So how were they hidden? Like just in.
I used to just put them down my waist. Yeah. If I fell her out, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I fell her out, I'd be in serious trouble. And that's where, basically, that's how it all was, really.
So you earned your respect. You were getting bullied. You earned
I wouldn't say, more like people just had a fear.
Fear.
More than respect. Who respects someone who's running around stabbing people? Who respects people who are running around like burgling people? And I don't think I had a reputation for respect. I had a reputation probably where half the organised criminals would think I was a scumbag.
Yeah.
But I was just off it. An absolute nutter.
Loose cannon.
And if anybody came to me, if anyone came to me, I wouldn't care if they were the top organised criminal either.
Yeah.
You could be the top boss all you want, but if you'd cross me and I had you in my mind, I'd just come to your door and stab you to death. And that's the kind of person I was. That's what I was like until I obviously become a bit changed.
So you said you got taxed in the jail when you were a youngster, but then people started to fear you in the jail as well.
Yeah. I had fear before I went in.
Okay. They carried over from the streets.
Yeah, because... When I stabbed Gales in the head, Gales has got a reputation in jail because he's a nutter. He was a bit of a nutter himself. In fact, he's in jail now doing life. So he's a bit of a nutter himself. So when I did that, everyone in the jail system knows who he is. So they were all like, he did thingy. Do you know what I mean? And then when I was, everyone knew that I'd been running around stabbing people and I was a bit off it because the few people who I stabbed were known for being psychopaths themselves.
Should have got a job as a chef.
Oh, I should have, definitely.
Just go and get a Calbee 1 second.
Yeah, let's just take a break 1 second. So what was it that caused you to turn your life around?
So I was in HMP Whitemore, top security... Long Larton. I was in Long Larton, top security prison, and... my door opened and told me to go to education. And the education, so you've got what you call in prison, just in case, because some people don't know, they've got movements. So in the morning, when it comes to going to education, they'll come and open everybody up and whatever destination there, so visit, work, education, gym, they'll open your doors, gym, education, and you go to education.
Yeah.
When you get to the other end and you turn up at the other end, there's like two prison officers with a clipboard. And if it's education, you'll be at the education door and they'll check, see if your name's on the list. If your name's not on the list...
You're not getting in.
They've got to send you back to the wing so you can go and get banged up. So they've opened my door and said, go to education. I went to education. When I've got there, they said, your name's not on the list. So I was like, what do you mean my name's not on the list? And I made a fuss because I was one of them, do you know what I mean? What do you mean? I was pet lip out, didn't get my own way kind of thing. And I must have done the officer's head in because he stepped back and he went, go to the chaplaincy. So I was like, buzzing, I'm not going back to my cell anyway. So went through, went to the chaplaincy. And when I walked in the room, there was like a circle of lads around this video with this like posh-haired, grey-haired man, you know, hello, you know, that kind of a person. And he was on the telly on the video. And I didn't realise it was like a Christian course, Basics of Christianity, like it's called the Alpha Course or something, Basics of Christianity. So I sat down and I just remember thinking, oh, no. One of them Christian things, you know what I mean? Them godly, crazy things. So I thought, right, as soon as the video stops, I'll go. And anyway, as the video stopped, I went to go. And one of the lads went to me, you get strawberry gattos and biscuits and that. I went, miss, can you put my name down, please? You know what I mean? So I got my name put on the course simply because of that. You know, I used to get Nescafe coffee, you know.
Yeah.
Used to get, like, strawberry gattos, Bis Bob and biscuits, you know, you could eat them all. And that was the reason why I carried on going on this course. So I'm going on the course. And as time's, I'm arguing and debating. I didn't believe in God or anything like that at all. I just thought they were all nuts, you know, they're just... I thought God was a my two beliefs. I believed science disproved God, and I believed that it was a conspiracy by the government to keep everybody under control. So if you can make everyone believe there's a God and you can't do these things, then everyone's good, you know. And
I'm still in two ways about it myself personally.
Yeah,
but each their own. If people can believe in it and actually get something good out of it, more power to them.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's just me personally.
Yeah.
You see people with huge sentences and then they fall back on the Bible and it stops them from killing themselves and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's everyone, you know, you can't force anything, but obviously I believe in God now. So I would always say to that is, what if it is right? One day you're going to pass away. It's hard enough here.
Yeah.
But if you die here and you had your bad life here one day and you did stand in front of them, then what are you going to do? Because you can't go, oh, please, give me one more chance. You've had it. But anyway, I'm not
going
to...
I'd be going that way, mate.
You don't want to? No, I'm only joking. But,
nice and warm.
But basically, I went on this course, and I disbelieved for them reasons. And I would argue all the time with them, debate with them. And I used to think, you're a load of rubbish. But what I respected was, they respected... I was swearing at them and being funny, and they would be like, oh, that's great, that's your opinion. I'd be like, eh? Because normally religious people, and including myself, I've done it myself, you're so thingied by it that you can't help sometimes but get a bit heated.
Mm.
And not meaning to, but you so believe it that you get a bit heated. And these weren't like this. So I'm there, I'm watching it, and the day come, what they sort of dedicate the Holy Spirit where they pray for people for God to do something and stuff like that. And they were, no, he told me, no, he did all that. They were praying and praying for people. A few people started crying, that happened to me. And I remember just thinking, see, rubbish, man, it's all rubbish, brainwashing me and all that stuff. And then I went out, and no, I actually remember making a cuppa. I remember the pastor coming to me and he said, look, I've never done this in all the years. Eddie Baker, he's called, said, I've never done this in all the years, but God's just told me to tell you to come here this afternoon by yourself. He wants, you know, come here. So I says, okay. So on the afternoon when they open up and do the movements, I went to the chaplaincy. I found him. He got two chairs like this. We sat in front of each other. And he said two verses out the Bible. And he said, no one's righteous, not one. We all fall short of the glory of God, which is in the Bible. And then he said another one, which was about Jesus dying on a cross for sinners. And, you know, no matter what you've done. Because I always had this religious belief. And the religious belief is, you know, you've got the good people and the bad people. And, you know, you've got to have this list of stuff you can do before you're a good person for God. That's not what the Bible actually preaches, by the way. The Bible preaches that we're all bad. We're all sinners, but some of us have been given the gift of God, grace. He sent Jesus down to die for you. And if you can accept that, you'll be forgiven by what Jesus did, shedding his blood for you. It's what the Christianities believe.
I've done Bible studies, and they say, like, I quote if there is a God, but they said it is a very jealous God. He's like, you know, if people didn't believe in him, he'd kill him.
Well, it does say, well, that's a good question, but the reality is, yeah. He does say in the Bible that anyone who refuses to follow him, then they are the enemies of God. That's quite obvious. There's always a devil and there's always a God. So if you're not with God, who are you with? In the sense of religion, like the faith. So you are sort of right in that sense, but it's true. He's give you a choice and you can choose to follow him or you choose not to. And if there's a punishment to that, then that's your choice you made, not his.
Yeah.
He's gave you a way out. He said, look, you know, believe. If you don't, then that's up to you in that sense. But what he wants is, I believe, is true people to follow him. And he's given you a free will to do it. Because if he doesn't give you a free will to do it, then do you really believe? See, this is the point. If God said, okay, you're all going to believe in God, and I'm going to make you believe, then you're not believing off your own accord. Therefore, no. Is that a true belief? And so what God's done is he's give you free will. Said, okay, you choose to go that way, you choose to go that way. Because I love you enough. I'm not going to control you like a robot. I'm going to give you the freedom to choose that choice. Because when the time comes, in the end, he wants you to believe in it off your own accord so he knows who the true believers are.
You can't get further than that.
That sounds crazy.
Can you really?
Yeah, you can't. But anyway, what was I saying about my...
You were saying that you went the classes, you were taking the piss, you went for the cakes and stuff, but then they started to talk to you in a different way that resonated.
Yeah. And then I just remember him...
Nice word, lad.
I just remember having a cup, going and making a cup of coffee, and the pastor come to me and saying, I've never done this in all the years I've worked here, but God's told me for you to come. Went to my cell, come back. And I remember sitting in a chair in front of us, and he just said, right, said two verses out the Bible. And then he just said, right, pray. He prayed, and then he said, pray. And I remember saying, well, what do you pray? What do I do? He said, from your heart, pray. And I just remember finding myself saying, God, if you're real, come into my life. I hate who I am. I hate who I become. Please, if you're real, just do something. Show me you're real. Nothing happened. I said my prayer. And we're just in a normal chat now. The prayer's over. I'm in a normal chat. And I start to feel like an energy bubbly feeling in my stomach. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And then it started to get stronger and stronger. And it rose up. And I just got this feeling shoot up my body. And I just burst out sobbing. And it always ups- this was 11 years ago. And it still upsets me now because it was the beginning of the change of my whole life.
You sure the cats are weren't out of date?
It was the beginning of the change in my whole life.
That's nice, that.
And it's when I realised I was wrong in life, what I've done. It's when the impact of who I've hurt really bothered me. It's when...
And since then, you've gone ahead and actually spoke to some of your former victims. Are you able to describe any of that?
I've apologised to every single victim, apart from one who wouldn't accept it, which is one prison officer. But one of the prison officers, I was invited. So, you see, I believe in God, and it changed my life. From that moment on, it changed my whole life. I never committed a crime since. And I got out, and within about a year or two, one of the Home House prison where I stabbed the prison officers, you would have thought they would have been the last prison to have me. They only contacted me, told me that one of the head officers was allowed to come round my house for cuppa. They want them to come round to see if I would, to discuss whether I could come in the prison and start working with the inmates. So I goes in, I'm in the office and with the officer, and he said to me, I'm just going to ring someone a minute. So he rang, picks the phone up, rings somebody. A little bit after the door knocks, the prison officer who I stabbed. And I just remember saying, look, I'm sorry for what I've done. Got a bit upset, and I said, can you forgive me? And he held up his hand and he just said, I forgive you. And it was crazy, it was surreal, because I'm now sat with an officer who I stabbed in a prison who hated me. And I'm sat there, and we're having a cup of tea, but you know when you're very apologetic and you can't help saying, I'm really sorry for what I did. I kept doing this, so we had a joke, because I kept saying, look, I'm really sorry. And at one point, I took a sip of my coffee and I went, look, I am really sorry. I wasn't in the right frame of mind. He went, tell us about it. You know what I mean? And we had a laugh. And what was offered is, like, for the first time in my life, I got to see a different side to the prison officers. And I realised that when they're on them wings, they've got to act like they are. Some of them are really nice people, but they've got to be like that. They don't want to be. Some of them officers who you them probably think horrible on the wing are the same officers who were going out in the part of a charity to stop prisoners going back to prison. This is what I was seeing. Like, this officer who people are saying they don't like, he's, like, invested and involved in running Christian charities to try and stop the prisoners offending.
They've got a front set, just to say.
Because if they don't...
It's a big front, isn't it?
They'll take the mick.
Yeah.
If they see a weakness in that officer, how many? No, they'll try and bully him. They'll try and get him to do stuff. They'll take the mick out of him. They'll not listen to him. So he's got to have it. And it's not what I saw. You know, when I was on the other side, I just saw a shirt scumbag.
You do get bad pennies. You do get ones where it just they're so quick to get the truncheon out and beat the shit out.
Yeah,
of you. It's unbelievable. But majority of them aren't like that. Majority of them are decent. But you just got to know, on the wing, they've got to front it.
Yeah, it's 100%. And that's what I'd never saw it. So when I was seeing it, it opened my eyes a little bit to, like, sometimes we're so narrow, we're so, like, on the blinkers of how we look and how we see things. And if we just step back and open our eyes up a little bit, you'll begin to see that there is...
Too busy in our own world, aren't we, just thinking of anyone else?
So did it change your view of the whole system, then? You weren't at war with the system anymore?
I was at war with myself. I still am.
Don't stab yourself.
You are your worst enemy.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned. You're your worst enemy. Like, pride in the Bible says pride comes before a fall. See, it's pride what makes you not want to get mugged off, so you go and stab someone. So that little gang member over there, when he ends up going and shooting him, do you know why he did that? Because he feels mugged off, so his pride's got him. So that pride makes him want to go back for revenge. See, pride, I think, is your biggest enemy. It's your own mindset, your own... If someone mugs you off and you could be at a point like, and? Mug me off? Big deal? How many people wouldn't commit a crime if they had that mentality? How many people wouldn't get revenge if they had that mentality?
I'm at that stage now. I've got a lot of trolls who can't stand me, call me a big fat bastard, and they're going to do me in, and they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And I'm like, arsed. You know what I mean? Not bothered.
Yeah.
Not at all. Because at the end of the day, 99% of it's just fucking talk. They're probably like 15-year-olds sat in the fucking mum's basement fucking on the keyboard. You know what I mean?
There you go, trolls. Keep it coming. And Wild Man is going to kill you with kindness. He's no longer going to do home visits. Yeah. Started out Wild Man was doing home visits.
I was going to look for your IP addresses and try and find yous and kill yous. But now, troll me all you want. I'm very sorry if my weight offends you, by the way.
What happens then when people from your old lifestyle meet you now?
Probably just think I'm an idiot because I'm like, you know, treat me like, I don't know, it's hard. It's because there's a few people who just...
I think they respect yourself.
I don't know. There's some people who do and there's some people who don't.
Have you got enemies who try and trigger you?
It's not necessarily enemies who try and trigger me. It's people who aren't enemies who try and trigger me. People who just, I don't know, I'm in a good place and they just seem to try and goad me and wind me up all the time to get a response out of me. And I have had once or twice where I've responded a bit and then thought, what are you doing? But yeah, I've had a lot of people, like things like my cousins, my younger cousins, like people, this is what hurts, people who were scared to death of me. People who wouldn't dream of crossing me, and they cross me. Now, I've got to live with...
You find your own family will fuck you off the worst.
I've had it all. Family, friends. I'm on my own in that sense, and I like it that way better. And the more public you become, the more, like you say, people come out, oh, who's you think he is, or this, or that.
Yeah.
And the more people come out. And sometimes you do think, if you said that to me when I was 20, you wouldn't dare.
You just got to know.
And it's just like, you know what, so.
It's one of Pablo Escobar's favourite quotes was, envy kills more people than cancer.
It's true.
As soon as you get success and people see you're doing well for yourself.
I have it.
Then they try and trip you up.
Yep. And what they say about you behind everything, I've had it all. I've lived it, but again, I've been through a big process of learning that and a big process of accepting that. But you sometimes you've got to go through a process, Because when it first starts happening, you get annoyed and you want to go and do something and you feel like you want to, but in the end, you're just like, you know what? I'm a man now. I can't really be chewed with this childish stuff.
What made you stop? Were you not carrying knives no more?
When I stopped...
Has he got knives on him?
When I had that experience, what I've just experienced.
Nice.
At that point, I didn't just stop carrying knives. I stopped violence. I had remorse. I struggle more with forgiving myself than I do anything else.
You're your own worst enemy, aren't you?
Yeah.
We all are. So you're not alone, bro. You know what I mean? You're your own worst. We used to go Bible study, didn't we?
Yeah.
There's one song I liked. It was like Save a Wrench Like You. I kind of like that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that Church on the Street?
Yeah.
Old Wooden Cross.
Yeah.
Save a Wrench Like You.
Jumper Jack Flash.
Jumping Bill.
Oh, Jumping Bill, yeah.
It's all in Hard Time, the book that we gave you. All our visits to the Church on the Street.
Yeah.
And this guy would come in called Jumping Bill. And Pastor Walt would just stop the mass and jump. He said, I'm going to let Jumping Bill take over. And he was bald. He had like a rainbow T-shirt on, a guitar and Jesus sandals. And he started strumming. And he's smiling. He's running around the room, getting everyone's faces, just smiling, like inches away from people. Comes to the back row where like all the hardcore people are, inches away from their faces, getting them to smile. And he sings, and he goes, everybody jump. And the whole room starts pogo dancing.
You've got the Spanish and the Italians all tattooed up, but all very religious, you know what I mean? And they're just like, you don't see a smile, are you? By the end of it, they're like, jumping themselves.
It's class, isn't it?
That was like a bright moment in a dark place.
I threw the priest come round and give us these little paper things you'd eat.
Oh yeah, it's
boring as fuck they was.
People so hungry, we were desperate for them.
I actually got it and just threw it at him.
No, he made an eye patch out of it first.
Oh, I made an eye patch out of it.
Just
like
to freak out, because on the front row is a lot of hardcore religious people with the religious tattoos. Wellman puts the eye patch on and he goes, look at me. And then he throws it at the priest. It's like a frisbee. Went, everyone watched it, got it, almost skimmed the ceiling and come down. Like, yeah. All right, anyway, writing a book is not easy. What made you want to write a book?
I didn't write it. I can't read and write properly. But so I'll answer it in this way. I was approached and told that my story by a freelance BBC man from the Glasshouse Publications. And he spoke to me for a bit and asked me if I'd do it. And I was a bit, I don't know. And then in the end, I thought, yeah, sack it. How many people might read this and see that you can change? See that you can change your life? See that, for me personally, to come to God. But if not, just to show that no matter what life you've had, no matter how much of a scumbag you are, you can change. And I'm proof of that. And so if one person can read the book, then I'm good enough with that. And if it helps them, I mean, then I'm good enough with that. And
how do you know you're getting a good deal, though? How do you know? Have you got legal representation?
I'm not bothered about a good deal.
You got to make money out of it.
Bothered about money.
What about people who are reading the book? Are they contacting you, giving you, saying like, this is inspired? Oh,
I've had two people who've turned up at my church saying that they believe in God now and they've been going to my church ever since.
Brilliant.
I've had people, you wouldn't believe the amount of people who've come to me and said like that it's helped them, that they've changed. Not necessarily all come to God, but that's sent them on the right path.
Right path, yeah.
I know handy criminals who are ex-criminals who have give their lives to God simply because they realised how psychopathic I used to be, and they just cannot believe that I'm in the position I'm in now, and they just can't get it, because one lad always talks about there was a look in my eyes where when I looked at them, it was if I was looking, I was looking through
them.
There was something blank there, you know, when they look.
Dead eyes.
Yeah, and then they look now, and even though they're a little dead, they're a bit alive now, do you know? No, but now you can, they're saying that they don't see that thing where it feels like they were looking through and something must have happened to me. And so
I think your eyes are sparkling now, like very alive. Yeah.
Psychopath has left the building.
You mentioned the BBC then and a possible film. What's going on?
It's a documentary film, so it's basically they've just went round interviewing prison officers. They filmed me in Home House Prison where I stabbed the prison officers. They filmed a prisoner, head prison officer who knows about it, who's friends with the officers I stabbed. They've gone to my friends. See, I wanted to, same with the book as well. I wanted to make it not one-sided so I can big myself up. And so what I did is I went to everybody who was involved and I said, this is the story of what I've explained. Do you agree with that? And they've said, yeah, that's what happened. And they've agreed with it and it's gone in. The documentary has just literally gone round and interviewed everyone who was part of my life who can back up what I'm saying. And you're talking prison officers, police officers, judges. You're talking ex-offenders, criminals who I hung about with as a kid, people who I've had run-ins with. So I talked about that, Paul Venice, the K1 fighter. He's on it. He's talking about what I used to be like. Said he'd bash me, which he would. I've got to admit that. He's solid. You know what I mean? Give me a right slap. But he said, you know, he remembers me and he knows, that I'm the kind of person that would have sort of come back and...
Did they interview the guard who you stabbed who accepted your forgiveness?
No, but no. He was asked to do it, but he didn't want to do it. So they interviewed the one who arranged for me to meet him when he rang him and he come.
Yeah. Forgiveness is enough, though, isn't it?
He's forgiven me.
You don't want to put him on front street.
Well, do you know what? It's unbelievable because when I was doing an alpha course in there with the lads, he was actually sending like lads up to say, "Oh, tell Shane, I'm asking after him." It's like you can't make this stuff. It's unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? I just in a place now. I've gone round the country talking. Do you know what happened? So I went down to London. Had this one book on me. Right, and I'm walking through this big massive. I've just done a talk, and I'm walking through this big massive shop, coffee shop, and you can eat and all that and stuff like that. And there's a lad there, and I just felt, I know you don't. Some people don't believe, but I just felt God say, "See him over there, a lad there." He said, "Go to him and give him a book." So I walked over, said, "Here, mate." I said, "Don't know why. I was just getting a big urge to come over and give you this book. So I'm going to listen to the urge." They give him the book. So he reads the front, most dangerous prisoner. He jumped up, he went, "Mate, are you being serious?" I was like, "What?" He said, "I'm on home release from prison." He said, "I'm going back to prison in a couple of days." He said, "How on earth did you know to come to me? How on earth did you know to come and give me that book?" He's like, "I can't believe it." He said, "I've been..." No, and it just... Like, now it makes me walk off thinking... Stuff like that makes me think even more, I know I'm right, I know. And things like that happen all the time.
Now all that positive energy now, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. I love it.
Yeah.
I just love helping people. I love just doing the right thing. But I will say it's not been easy. It's a battle all the time. And it's still, I'm not going to profess that like instantly, that's it. There's never been no struggles. In fact, sometimes it's tougher and harder for me because before, if I reacted to people and dealt with them, then the pressure was gone. I had no pressure. I dealt with it and I'm happy now.
Yeah.
They know not to cross me. Now I've got to live with the fact that I'm being mugged off and I've just got to take it. And that sometimes is even more pressure in your own mind than, the pride and think I'm a mug and all that stuff. Is a bigger battle to overcome sometimes.
Sometimes when you've lived an exciting life and then you calm down, you still have to do other things to give you that excitement.
Yeah.
Have you replaced the old stuff with other things that give you excitement?
Church.
My wife, every night. Sorry, I'm just trying to have a crack on. But yeah, if you can, my kids and stuff like that and my wife and just doing stuff, and I get a buzz out of going around talking and helping
people
out.
Still doing your fitness?
Does it look like it? Not really. And again, it's because when I was training before, I trained for one reason, to be ready if I had to, I was mentally ill. I had this...
You don't have to be ready for nothing now, do you?
No,
you know what I mean?
Not Well, I hope not, but yeah. But now I'm just sort of, I chill out. I've got no problems, no worries at the minute. So I'll just chill out and just let God hopefully help my life get better.
What's your favourite scram? Do you like kebabs?
Love kebab. What was it? Hot shot pizza with full of kebab meat on the top.
Oh, that sounds nice.
And 20 packets of 20 bags of chips as well. I love the Chinese chips.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I love them. So I buy them on the run and eat them. So I've got to be careful because I was meant to have started losing like loads of weight for the on the lockdown.
Yeah.
Right, that's it. I'm going to lose weight. I put about a stone and a half on.
Tell can't me about stop it, eating. Fucking hell. 27 fucking stone.
It's because you get older and you don't care like about your looks, and I think that's what the problem is. And sometimes with some, you just think sack it. Who cares?
I'm married now. Yeah. I've got my woman. Fuck it. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter if I look like a fat bastard or not.
It's a shame. People watching this are going to be so inspired by this incredible turnaround. I mean, I've never heard someone go from one extreme like that so far to the other, and that's remarkable. And that's, you know, credit to your character and your personal development and everything. If these people are watching this who are inspired by you, if they want to contact you, I mean, I'm going to put all your links in the description box. What's the preferred method of them contacting you?
Probably his email.
By email, so yeah. Put your email down there.
Email, and if the one if the contact goes, I'll just give them a number, and then.
Are you on like Facebook or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Yeah,
I wouldn't give you numbers out on Facebook or anything like that.
No, I don't.
You're gonna get fucking dickheads. Going.
Yeah, no, I've only got. I went from 5,000 people to 200 on my Facebook.
Yeah.
If I haven't met them, and don't know them, I don't tend to add them, but. I guess if there was people who were contact me saying they're struggling and they seemed all right, then I guess I would, and I guess I probably might possibly just on my email say, here's my number. Can easily block it if they...
I've got Thai birds. I don't even have to birds. They might be fucking men, actually. Look all right, like, but you know what I mean?
Lucky bugger. So if you've enjoyed this video, then, please let us know in the comments section what you thought about it today. And if you want to subscribe, thanks for subscribing. Subscription logos in the bottom right hand corner. If you want to donate to what we're doing, producing these podcasts at this high quality in the studio, donation links are also in the description box. There's a link to Wildman's playlist in the description box. He's got over 100 videos now, hours and hours and hours of endless content. And now he's got his Skype set up officially. Yeah. That was at his house.
Set that up.
And he's going to be doing interviewing people all over the world who've got prison experiences himself by Skype webcam. I'm going to be in charge of the Epstein stuff that Wildman loves so much.
Can't stand cunt. if you thought I was mad, this guy's really mad, you know what I mean?
Was.
Yes, was.
Let's give you a hug, man. That's brilliant. Man. Fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely blown away by your story, man. Yeah, well done.